Hello.
And welcome to Dragons Made Me Do It, one of potentially many podcasts about Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Pern series, but the only one by us.
I'm Clay.
And I'm Tequila Mockingbird.
And today we are continuing our unhinged discussion of numbers.
Because we just couldn't get enough of it.
Shall we talk about dragons?
Let's talk about dragons. So I am, I think, broadly on board with the speculations from News from Bree about dragon populations. So first of all, we do get some hard numbers for that. There are 1,800 dragons who come forward in time. So that's exactly 360 yep. dragons per weir. It seems likely the later numbers that we get indicate that they regard 500 as being the appropriate number. So the 360 number is from the end of the pass. If we are thinking about dragon demographics, that also, I don't think that McCaffrey had put this much thought into it, but that would also add to some of the tensions. If the old timers especially are not producing large clutches and are not producing queens because their dragons are kind of entering the interval cycle.
Winding down.
Yeah. Rather than the beginning of the pass cycle, that maybe also explains some of the tensions and the complaints about, oh, there's so much land area that we have to cover. It's like, well, not only is there more land area, but also your dragons are not actually
at replacement rate.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating to question, because the humans cannot control when a dragon rises to mate or the size of a clutch. We are told that, oh, they have bigger clutches as a pass approaches, and then they have smaller clutches as we start to go to an interval. And so my question is that supposed to be something that Kitty Ping Young programmed in?
It kind of has to be, right?
Right? So is the implication that the dragons can tell when the red star is going to be approaching, or is that just a every 200 years thing? Because I feel like it would be a lot easier to program in every X generations than when an astrological body is within a certain range.
Especially considering that they did not,
no,
explicitly in Dragon's Dawn, they did not fully understand the orbit of the red star.
Yeah. So I think it has to be that they're designed because they did know how long a pass would take and how long the interval between a pass would be in Dragon's Dawn. So that it's set up for roughly every this many generations, you just start to get bigger sizes, and then call it 10, 15 generations after that, you go back down to smaller ones. But
that also doesn't make any sense.
Wicked hard. Yeah.
I mean, it implies that dragons have a kind of internal biological clock as a species as a whole that is telling them how many generations it's been.
And I mean, I don't not think that that's in line with the broader generational memory of fire lizards, question mark?
Yeah, question mark?
Very question mark. Very question mark, all of this. But also, dragons can sense threat.
Yes.
And we don't really know how they do that, other than generally, oh, they're sort of psychic, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, well, all Pernie's life, up to and including by the Ninth Pass, humans and herd beasts, seems to have some kind of innate awareness of the advent of threat.
Which is wild.
Even at the beginning of Renegades. And part of this is eventually revealed to be Harper Hall propaganda, but also there's rumors circulating about the return of Thread, and people are giving them more
right.
credence than you might expect after 400 years of nothing.
I would be inclined to put that down to Harper Hall propaganda rather than.
Yeah, but I think that, like,
psychic ability to sense the oncoming astrological phenomenon.
Yes, but the Harper Hall propaganda has clearly found fertile ground.
Uh-huh.
People, for example, don't seem to have changed their opinion of the weird at that point. But in spite of that, there does seem to be at least some popular awareness of, like, Thread's gonna come back soon, maybe.
That, to me, feels more in line with innate superstition or innate paranoia. Mm. Something bad is gonna happen. Something bad could happen. You never can tell. You gotta be sure. In a way that, especially since we are told that Fax is somewhat unique. He's a visionary in terms of interpersonal violence. Mm-hmm. On a structural or a larger level on Pern. So if you don't have internecine violence within communities, I could believe that Thread has taken that cultural place of the boogeyman under your bed or the thing that you hate, and that there would then be a cultural reinforcement of
yeah.
stories about how bad Thread is and being afraid that it's going to come back and behave or Thread will get you, kind of as a cultural concept.
Yeah, and I think it fits into a larger trend of awareness of Thread in ways that are not necessarily
possible. plausible?
Immediately explicable or possible. Yeah.
Fantasy series.
There are a few things that I am thinking about. One is the rate at which Ramoth is having mating flights. We are told that present past 20, so 21 years after her first mating flight, is her 35th clutch, which is about 1.6 per turn, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
If every queen dragon is having the same number of clutches and also having 25 to 35 eggs per clutch.
Although I do think that some of that is how special and amazing Ramoth is. We're told that her clutches are larger than other queens, that she is the largest queen, things like that.
Yes.
And I could also believe, although I do not insist upon, the fact that she genuinely has an emotional, romantic relationship with Nementhe might mean that they are rising to mate more often than other queen dragons might be.
Hmm.
As I said, I don't insist upon it, but it occurs to me that that could be possible.
I'm not sure I buy that, in part because I don't think it's, I don't think it's a necessary explanation. I kind of think it is a necessary explanation because otherwise I think the number of new dragon riders per year is simply much greater than any reasonable number of dragon rider casualties per year.
But on the other hand, the books make a point of telling us that a certain number of weirlings just die. That learning how to go between is incredibly dangerous, and learning how to fly Threadfall is incredibly dangerous, and that there's a certain, I think, not low percentage of the average dragon rider cohort that doesn't make it to even become a full dragon rider.
Yeah.
Because I do think it implies that the population of dragons is stable, which would suggest that whatever number of eggs are being hatched is the replacement rate. Now, I could also believe that Ramoth, especially at the beginning, was having more clutches. Maybe it's not 1.6 every year. Maybe it was 2 a year for the first 5 years and then tapering off as there were more queen dragons. Because there was some kind of instinctual, for a while she was the only queen, and so there was a significant urge to have as many eggs as possible. The pass is starting, oh my gosh. And then as that becomes less and less important and she gets older, it trails off.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the numbers add up.
No.
And that's sort of the conclusion that News from Bree reaches, is that in order to make this make sense, you have to make a bunch of judgment calls about how many novice riders die, how many older riders die, which don't actually match up with the numbers that we are given in the book. For example, the first Threadfall of the Ninth Pass, where only one person dies. And there are some other serious injuries, but none of them are permanent injuries.
Sure.
If there's one death in the first Threadfall when they have no prior experience actually fighting Thread.
But I think what Moretta suggests is that deaths come from complacency as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be much more likely towards the end of a pass, both in terms of you think you know what you're doing, so you're not as desperately focused on, right? Because I really believe that all of those dragon riders in that first Threadfall of the Ninth Pass were giving it 110% of their focus and energy. This was like, oh my God.
Yes.
Whereas it might become more workaday and you're like, oh yeah, okay. And then that's when you fail to visualize. And also you would get tired, right?
Yes.
Because deaths coming in and out of between are, I would say, vastly more likely when you're tired.
Yeah.
And as the pass continues, you would get more and more exhausted.
Yeah.
So I would believe that you aren't generally getting a lot of dragon rider casualties the first 4 or 5 years of a pass. But in the last 4 or 5, that number might really go up.
I'm just a little skeptical still.
I mean, fair.
In part because I think that News from Bree's speculation, based on some information that we get a little bit obliquely in Moretta, is that queens are generally having smaller clutches later in the pass, which seems to me like actually you would want the opposite of that, because down that road lies not only are there more dragon rider casualties, but then also more threads getting through the wings because there are just fewer dragons and a bunch of other things that I don't think are really supported by the text.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think this is something where McCaffrey did not put a ton of consideration into it.
Yeah.
And was thinking more about what sounded good narratively.
Yes. And that is definitely in keeping with what we see in other places.
Yeah.
Because I think the News from Bree, the number that he gets to is 1.7 deaths per day. And that does seem like, no, we're really just not seeing that.
Yeah. I also was going to note that one of the other things that is deeply inconsistent in connection with this is the amount of dragons of different colors that we see in clutches. And I'll talk more in a second about actual overall color ratios, but there aren't that many clutches where we get detailed information about how many dragons of each color are available. In fact, there's no clutch where the whole clutch is accounted for. Mm-hmm. But the ones where we do get information about a large percentage of the clutch are way disproportionately bronzes. Predeth's first clutch is 35 eggs, of which 14 are bronzes. Like, that's bonkers.
Ridiculous. Those should be green.
More than those should be greens, in fact. And by the same token, in Ramoth's 35th clutch, there are, I think, 12 bronzes out of 35 eggs, which is also...
Yeah, bonkers.
Too many. And we're told that Falar is dissatisfied. It's like, oh, there should have been more browns, but the blues and greens is right, at least. But she wanted what would sound good, and what sounds good is lots of bronzes, because everyone knows bronzes are objectively the best kind of dragon, apparently.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which brings us to the thing that initially made me go, oh, we should talk about this for an episode, which was thinking about how many dragons of each color actually are there. And I went through...
How many dragons of each color actually are there, Thay?
That's a great question. So per McCaffrey's statements, but not, I believe, explicitly set out in the books, the population ratios of the different colors are approximately 50% of the population of dragons is greens, approximately 30% blues, approximately 15% browns, approximately 5% bronzes, and approximately 1% queens.
So those numbers where you had about 30% bronzes in those clutches, that was really...
Something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
Overall, I went through, and unscientifically, to be fair, but also I think this is probably not unrepresentative, went through all of the books that I have access to through all the Weirs of Pern, excluding Dragon's Dawn, because the
ratios are wonky then, yeah.
Dragon demographics in that are explicitly, there are no browns, blues, or greens. And it was like, how many dragons and riders of each color do we meet, in fact? The answer is, of the 130 dragons and riders that we meet, 37 are queens, which is 30% of the total. 49 are bronzes, which is 38% of the total. 17 plus or minus one, depending on how we feel about Lytol's dragon, Larth, are browns, which is 13% of the total. Only 11 are blues, which is 8% of the total. And 15 plus or minus Larth are greens, which is about 12% of the total.
I would personally say that Larth was a brown in terms of that distribution, because that seems to be what she sticks with.
Yeah, I do think that there are probably other reasons why she made that decision.
Uh-huh.
But in any case...
Yeah. Now, to be fair, that's pulling from multiple different time periods. So that's not supposed to be the dragons who are all alive on Pern at once. And it represents far more than an attempt to be an impartial survey who are the protagonist characters.
Yes.
Because we're frequently learning the name of every single queen, dragon, and rider on Pern at the time. We know all of the queens during the sixth pass and all of the queens during the ninth pass in a way where it's never even suggested that we know all of the blues, even within a weir.
Yes. However, in point of fact, if we look at just dragons who are named in Moretta.
Yeah.
Actually, Moretta has some of the most information about blues and greens of any of the books. So I think if we looked at, I didn't do the Moretta percentages separately.
Right.
But I believe that if we look at the Moretta percentages, we will find that they are much more, I mean, still going to be skewed towards queens and bronzes because we do meet.
Right.
Every weir woman on Pern, basically.
And all the weir leaders at the conference and things.
But I think that they will be slightly less absurdly skewed.
Yeah.
Which is to say, I'm looking at just the number of blues here, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4 blue riders named in all of the main timeline.
Yeah.
And 7 named just in Moretta.
Although she had to have blue riders because for some reason in Moretta she just hates blue riders.
True, yeah.
They're just all out there being rude and incompetent inexplicably.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, what is... Anyway.
It's so weird. And I think in the same way where if you looked at the protagonist of Regency romance novels, you would come to the conclusion that 60% of the population of England was dukes in the 1810s. It's who we choose to focus on narratively because we want characters who have agency and who are fun and special and who get to do cool things in the story. That's bronzes and queens.
Well, and who will be enthusiastic participants. participants in monogamous heterosexual romances.
Right. On one hand, it makes sense that she's focusing her protagonist energy there. On the other hand, I do think it is a little ridiculous to think about in terms of...
She's written herself into a corner by being so emphatic about bronzes are the best. Bronze dragons are the best dragons. Everyone wants to have a bronze, which means every sympathetic character in the books has to be a bronze rider because they're the best ones.
Yeah. Truly, it's Fëanor for camp. And do we really get any other significant protagonist characters who ride a dragon of a different color?
Patero in Dragon's Eye.
Yeah.
And Kalon, sort of, in Moretta. And then...
You could make an argument for Mirim, I guess.
I believe Ty is a POV character in Skies of Pern, although I haven't read it since 2003, but...
And is Debera.
Yeah.
So it's not that they don't exist, but that the ratios are wildly skewed.
Yeah.
And I think also, yeah, just in terms of, I don't know, filling out the backstory or the side characters, she could use a little more of a skew towards blues and browns and greens.
Yeah, and to be fair, we do often get passing references to a green rider or a blue rider who are not named, and so it's impossible to track that.
Fair.
But I think that they might still be outnumbered overall by the number of bronzes that we are aware of.
Yeah. I think, to me, more damning than which characters does she give named page time and protagonist time is the number of eggs in the clutch, because that is supposed to be broadly representative of the number of dragons out there.
Yeah.
And that's just sloppy.
It frankly kind of just feels to me like once she'd been like, green riders are all gay, she was like, also, we gotta have there be way less of them than I implied there were earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. You were also calculating mating flight rates, right?
Yes.
If we're assuming that green dragons rise to mate.
Oh my god, yeah. If we assume that green dragons are rising to mate at a comparable rate to queens, and if we are also assuming, first of all, if green dragons do in fact make up approximately 50% of the dragon population, let's take 360 as our dragon population.
Which I think is fair, if a little low.
Let's pretend that that is accurate and that the 500 that they say is...
Aspirational.
Is actually too high. Yeah, aspirational. Because
I think they say that that's the number of spaces for dragons in a weir.
Yeah.
And at the point where they're actually building the weirs, they didn't know how many dragons they would settle on, because that was still while they were trying to build the number of dragons up.
Yeah.
So I could absolutely believe that the initial settlements, they were like, I don't know, put in 500 weirs. That's probably about right.
Yeah. Well, I think some of the numbers that we get later on when they're talking about establishing Eastern Weir or Monaco Bay Weir down on the southern continent, I think that suggests a number more like 500 per weir. But in any case... Let's say there's 360. That would mean approximately 180 greens, which at a rate of 1.6 mating flights per year would mean 288 green mating flights per year.
And when you also have a handful of queen mating flights, that's a mating flight not every day, but more than every other day.
Yeah, which is... Very silly.
No wonder that they need someone to tie to them. They don't have any time to do anything other than have orgies.
Yeah.
They're so busy having orgies. How do they even fight thread?
This is, again, one of the inconsistencies of the series is how mating flights are portrayed. Sometimes we're told that it's all-consuming, and we're told explicitly in Dragon Quest that mating flights are psychically projected on everyone in the area. And we see this also in The White Dragon with the one green mating flight.
Yeah.
But then also in Dragon Flight, there's a passing mention of a green mating flight, which is Fëanor and Lessa are down in the records room and they hear a dragon screeching up above, and Fëanor's like, oh, another green's getting herself chased again, implying that actually it's totally fine and this doesn't affect anyone. And then we get the Ista mating flight in The White Dragon, where, first of all, Fëanor is just there, apparently.
Just hanging out.
But Nemeth is somehow excluded from the mating flight.
Nemeth is married.
And also, they brought Robin into the weir for what we have previously been given to understand is going to be a weir-wide orgy, so I guess that's fine.
Yes, I don't understand why you're confused about this. He gets perks.
So it's all just very inconsistent, and I don't think she thought about the numbers. But also, out of curiosity, I wonder what if we take...
A lower number of greens.
The 11.9% to be the accurate number.
Even call it 20% and assume we just don't know names. I think you could also plausibly suggest that greens don't rise to mate as often as gold dragons do, because...
If we took 11.9% as accurate, that would only be 69 green mating flights per year.
Nice.
Very funny. I mean, it's rounded up, but still nice. Which is way less unreasonable, but also doesn't align with how many greens we're told they need. And also, it's still kind of a lot.
Even that is putting it at, like, 2 mating flights a week.
Well, one and a bit, anyway.
Remember, you are also going to have some cold mating flights.
Yes, that's true.
So it's just, if you're having a mating flight every 4 or 5 days, that's chaos.
Yeah, let's see. If they're 20%, that's 115 green mating flights per year. So one every 3 days-ish.
Just in terms of, again, the material culture, like, where are the weirs getting all of this lube?
One mating flight every 3 days, and also presumably mating flights do not happen when there's going to be Threadfall, which the dragons seem to kind of be aware of.
Right.
Otherwise, presumably that would be mentioned at some point.
So during an actual pass, it's going to be orgy, Threadfall, orgy, Threadfall. They're going to be too tired to... That's why they're all dying.
Apparently.
They're all dying because they're too fucked out to fly correctly.
Yeah, that's kind of the only conclusion that we can reach, even with a small number of greens. And with a larger number of greens, I don't know what to say.
The conclusion that we have to draw, based on the information we are canonically given, is that a large number of dragon riders die every year because they have had too much sex and they are too exhausted to safely fight Thread. And that the solution to this is to just lay more dragon eggs and have more orgies and have more dragons so that you have a replacement rate and you can continue to fight Thread safely.
And that, I think, is a great place for us to conclude this set of unhinged ranting and some very detailed numbers from Tequila.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Dragons Made Me Do It. If you enjoyed it and want to hear more, you can follow us on Tumblr at dmmdipodcast.tumblr.com for updates or to send us questions or comments. And you can find our archive of episodes, along with transcripts, recommendations, funny memes, and more, at dmmdipodcast.neocities.org, NEO Cities.